Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to The Higher Dimension. I am your hostess, Phyllis Pricer, and we have a wonderful show with us this weekend, and we have a lovely guest, a lady who is going, I understand, to have her own show. Is that correct?
Well, yes, I am.
Yes, this is Hillary Ramel, and welcome to our show, Hillary.
Well, thank you, Phyllis, for having me. It's a pleasure.
That's all right. I am having a little trouble with my AOL. It's it's angry at me for whatever reason.
Such is the internet world, right?
Oh, God. Yeah, it says I can't find my line, and I'm going, you know, giving them the Bronx cheer, I think is what it's called. At any rate, welcome for this wonderful Memorial Day weekend. I'm so glad to have you here.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you and all your listeners, for sure.
Okay. And you went away for a while, for a few weekends, right? You went down to the shore, or was I thinking of someone else who went to the shore?
Well, I travel a lot with my work.
Okay.
So I'm away here and there. I lead trips to places around the world also. So sometimes I'm here, and sometimes I'm very far away.
How lovely. How fascinating. Well, I wasn't sure what we were going to talk about this weekend. I tried to get back on the internet to get some more information about you, but it went gave me the old Brooklyn raspberry, as I said, so I am not sure what's going on. So I'm going to have to see what we can do.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. Tell us a little bit about yourself there.
Well, I've been on a metaphysical path most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
It started, my grandfather was my very first teacher, and he started working with me when I was 5 years old with past life regressions, meditation, all sorts of things in that perspective. And, you know, as I grew up, I just found myself in different situations where, you know, learning about higher consciousness and evolution and those kinds of things were just always a part of my life. So eventually I ended up having certain experiences with different teachers and finding myself drawn to certain situations, traveling to places around the world such as Machu Picchu in Peru, Egypt, the pyramids. Yeah, and eventually I wrote a book, and I just come out with my second book, and now I spend my life pretty much doing readings with people and talking about how to manifest the things that they want to do in their life and get past some of the blocks that they have.
Oh, boy, don't we all have blocks. Some made of ice, some made of styrofoam.
That's the truth.
I'm interested in that it was your grandfather. Very often it goes down the female line, this type of ability.
Yeah, you know, that was pretty interesting. I think my grandfather worked with tarot cards most of his life. He was a psychic. He worked in the different venues. And, you know, he was pretty mainstream with it. He spent most of his life pursuing that. He worked with the embassy in Peru. He lived in Peru for quite a while.
Oh, really?
My mother, yep, my mother and my family actually lived there when they were in elementary school because he worked with the government down there. So he was stationed down there, so to speak, working with some of the projects that they have going on down there. So they grew up in that environment, came back to the States, and he picked up most of his metaphysical stuff that he got involved with once he came back to the States.
Really?
Yep. So it was one of those life-changing things for him to be down in Peru, working in Cusco and Lima and all of those different places. So it was a changing point in his life. And he investigated it and just kept going and eventually did meditation CDs and, you know, just really, you know, of course, at the time, I didn't realize what it was because I was a little girl. But, you know, now looking back, he's passed away 9 years now. He's been gone. He died on his 70th birthday, I might
add. Yeah, a young man, relatively young.
He came in and went out the same way. That's what we always say.
Really?
He literally died on his birthday. So it was so fitting for his life path, though. So he introduced me early on to crystals and working with amethyst, particularly reading tarot cards, just basically teaching me to trust my intuition and really building those gifts of inner sight and intuitive knowing.
And you say he worked with you on amethyst?
He He used to give me little amethyst every time I would see him. You know, most grandparents give a $10 bill or maybe a $5 bill. My grandfather always gave me amethyst stones.
What?
So amethyst stones are a real big connection.
Oh,
I think,
really?
Yeah, and looking back, you know, I did ask him about that as I got older, and amethyst for him was a protective stone. It was a protection.
Well, you should see the amethyst I have in my living room. It's about 4.5 feet tall.
Oh, well, my house is surrounded.
I've always loved amethyst, even though my birthstone is a garnet.
Oh.
And I was told to wear garnets or keep garnets around me. For some reason, I've always had a particular fondness for amethyst.
Yeah.
And been fascinated by them.
Well, they're great stones, and I've worked with them, you know, in my intuitive work that I do,
uh-huh.
I have worked with them very closely, probably because that was pretty much given to me from a very early age.
Right.
So I've developed a strong relationship with them. But he did say it was for protective purposes, and it's a stone that develops higher psychic abilities.
Really?
Yeah, that's what he always told me. So that's what I work with it as.
Wow, that's very cool. Well, maybe it's been working for me, and I just didn't know why. At any rate, so you are now doing this work full-time, is that correct?
Yes, I am.
How wonderful.
Well, it took me a while to get there. I think, you know, anybody in our line of work, so to speak, you know, we spend our whole lives trying to, I speak for myself on this, but I've spent a lot of time trying not to get into this field.
You and me both.
You know, going into other things, I work in the real estate world as well. So I spent a majority of my time going to college, getting a degree in psychology and, you know,
pursuing the
mental aspects.
That is a good allied field, by the way.
It is. Looking at it now, it is. At the time, I went into it because it seemed more of an intellectual route to take for the intuitive realms that we work in, and it felt like a better fit, I'll fit in better with that sort of background.
Well, yeah, and psychologically speaking, and finding how things work, you know, you can poke and pry in the brain just as you can poke and pry in the science.
Well, you know, it's interesting because it's now one of my most valuable sources, and even though I don't practice psychology in the practical sense, I practice it in the metaphysical sense. So it has bridged very well an intellectual concept into the work
that we
do.
That's probably why you took it.
Yep. There's a reason for everything, you know.
Of course, I'm a little day late and a dollar shorter. That's the expression on finding some of this out.
Yeah, you know, it's turned out to be one of the bigger assets, like I said, and you know, even in the writing of my books, I've talked a lot about my new book coming out. I talk about people's relationship with abundance, and I researched, you know, interviewing people for a year, talking about money and how it relates, and I really was able to grasp some of the bigger pictures going on when I was working with some of my clients in, you know, an intuitive counseling setting, which is what I do normally. Intuitive counseling sessions. I realized that money was a really big component of...
Right.
I think it's because it's so practical, and everybody, no matter what you do in the world, you have to have money.
Yes,
you know, our society is based on that, and it's pretty much...
I noticed the mortgage company wants checks, not smiles. I figured that real early on, you know, that a mortgage company doesn't pay the rent. Not in the way we were brought up, anyway.
Well, it's interesting too because it's a good platform to start off with when I'm doing a session with somebody, because their relationship with money tends to be a mirror of a larger relationship to self.
Really?
And
let's go into that. Let's go. That to me is something like I'd like to develop the relationship with money, how people think about it, how it's affected by how they were raised and the culture they're in.
Well, absolutely, because it starts with your parents. You know, first thing I do when I work with somebody in a setting like that is I talk about what their relationship with their parents were like, not only at a broader level, but specifically what were their parents' relationship with money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kids grow up with parents and, you know, arguing in different venues, of course, and they pick up on everything.
Yeah.
But,
that little radar.
Yeah, absolutely. And then if the mother has, you know, issues with, everybody has issues with money, so it just depends on what we were raised with And if the father, you know, hoarded money and the mother spent money and there was arguments over that, then it's a, it lays a energetic foundation into their adulthood and how they approach money. They'll either try to not be like one parent and be like another or try to be like neither, and they have to break those cycles, and it's pretty much relevant to the rest of their life as well. So what I start with is by going into a little deeper investigation into what they can remember their relationship, you know, what their parents' relationship was with money. And then we talk about that and how it's come into their adulthood life. So, and most often, it's a psychological it's kind of a psychological approach to it, but it's very effective. And what I do is it begins to open up a doorway into understanding some of the cycles and patterns of what they do with money and how, because we all have a dysfunctional relationship with money on some level. It's just like our relationship with people or our jobs or what we're doing with our life. You know, we either love it and hoard it and hold it tight and cling, or we don't want any responsibility with it at all and we push it away from us at all costs. Or, you know, I have also found, and maybe you've experienced this too, is that in the spiritual realms, people have particularly hard time with money because, you know, it's a material thing, and we're sought to seek higher consciousness, and money doesn't quite fit. Well, we're not quite sure how it fits in there, most of us.
Well, yeah, and, my mother said she wanted me to develop my gifts, but she didn't want me to charge any money for it.
Well, see, I'm glad you said that, because
it is like when I was raised, it wasn't only that. It's when we had neighbors who wanted little jobs done, and I want to make money. My mother would not let me accept money for doing anything for a neighbor. As a result, my neighbors felt they couldn't ask me to do anything because they didn't want me to give away free service.
Right.
You know, whether it was to cut the grass or run errands for the elderly or something, and, you know, they wanted to pay their way. So my mom she encouraged me to do Red Cross volunteer work, which was fine and dandy, but to earn money, and even when she got older, she would say, oh, well, you can make this much money. And I said, well, why limit? Why can't I make X, Y, Z money? And she'd say, oh, well, it's enough money if you make X, Y, this money. You don't need to. And I said, but why would I restrict myself? And she couldn't comprehend that particular concept in her mind.
But she has a mindset of poverty consciousness.
She was brought up in the Depression.
Right.
She was good with money. That woman could pick stocks that rose like rockets. I mean, she was, and yet she didn't honor her own instincts and would listen to a, financial advisor. And then later on she said, well, I did better than he did. I listened to myself. And I said, well, why didn't you? She said, well, I wasn't she didn't have trust.
Yeah.
Her own instincts, which were wonderful, but when she went to a different, financial advisor, stockbroker, he'd say, well, why did you pick that? And almost always it started going up after she'd tell him to buy it. He'd say, well, I don't know. It just sounded like it was a good thing to go.
Well, you know, there's a whole lot in that story, and that's why I do what I do, because it's, you know, when somebody starts to talk about their story, so to speak, when it comes to money, it's very interesting how things are revealed in that. And it, you know, your mother's very, that mindset is very common, especially particularly for
yes.
older people who've grown up in the Depression. And
yes.
even now, as we enter into harder economic times around the world, you know, with all the stuff going on, I mean, with the gas prices the way they are, it's really a tricky balancing act not to get into the fear and the survival consciousness, because that really keeps you at a lower vibration and keeps you very limited.
Right.
And we're so at a time when we're being asked to raise our vibration and to come out of that fear consciousness into higher consciousness. And, you know, money is a really easy way to keep people into that fear consciousness.
Yeah.
And so when we're going into situations where, okay, well, practically, you know, practicality-wise, I'm paying more for groceries, I'm paying more for gas, you know, how can I afford to pay $3,000 to go see Egypt for my spiritual well-being.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense to a lot of people. However, if you, you know, this is what I talk to my people, when people come and talk to me about this, this is the advice I give to them quite often, is it's just about restructuring where your money goes. You know, my husband and I just planted a garden because I like, we eat fresh, a lot of fresh produce, and fresh produce is so expensive. It's going up and up, especially if you buy organic. So we decided to plant our own garden. We usually, normally we don't have the time. You know, he runs his own company and I have my own companies too. So it's just very, very hectic. But we decided to make the time to plant the vegetables, the fresh vegetables that we want to eat, so we don't have to go to the grocery store and spend, you know, $25-$30 a pop for a meal for have fresh produce.
And I want you to know I have planted some herbs in my backyard, and I want you to know the birds very much appreciate it. Because
you know, that's probably why they've been hanging out over my deck the last few days.
And I take my dish with them, and I tell them, I don't plant it for you, friends. This is for me to have in my garden salad. And I came home and I nipped off all three of my basil plants.
Well, you know, we're near a grocery store.
And I'm sitting here shaking my fist at the trees that are empty, and the birds are going, meh, got her.
Oh, that's why they're all hanging out over my deck. I knew there was a reason. I thought it was just, they were just admiring my work. Figures, they're waiting for me to leave so they can
eat
it
all. That's right, so they can help them, right, exactly, you know. And I'm a rather persistent person. I mean, I have a squirrel now who comes and demands that I feed him, and he's so cheeky, he almost comes into the house, and I said, you know, shoo, scat, I give you exactly three nuts, that's it, goodbye. And he just looks at me like, you know, and he almost comes in the door, and I said, I got news for you, Phil. You know, you are not privy to my kitchen. That's it.
Well, you know, that's a good analogy, because the squirrels are so persistent in what they want in life.
Oh, golly,
and
yes.
Where they know, and they know where to get it. And if we can, we can learn a great lesson from those animals, believe it or not, because if we can take that own that focus and persistence into our own life and pursue those things with the same amount of
enthusiasm and dedication,
it would prove us, it would do us very well. And so, you know, getting back to what I was saying before, when we make choices to just shift our perspectives about things and shift our money around, and you know, it's not the end of the world. It's gas prices are going up. You just drive less. You pick and choose where you're going to go.
Right.
You know, be like that squirrel and know exactly where you're headed to instead of just driving around, you know, all over the place. Be very, very specific. Cut back and pick and choose where you want to focus your energy and money on.
I have picked and done. But I went through a really tough period in which actually had to give up everything, okay? I mean, like everything that I had built up just went south. A piece at a time, which, you know, and I sort of come out of it, and I started coming out of it well, and then I went back in, and I said, well, maybe I didn't learn all the lessons I was supposed to learn, but, you know, I also said, you know, God, you and I have got to have a come Jesus meeting. This is not working for me. things have got to change. You've got to send helpers and so forth, and so far it's worked. But part of it is I've also found a change in myself that every time I looked at a card, I was told to trust. Now, trust is a very big issue with me, okay, because of experiences in this lifetime and probably others. But, you know, I didn't, money to me, I don't know how to explain this. When I was about 4 or 5 years old, my mother tried to teach me budgeting. I think it was a lovely idea, and I think she was out of her freaking mind to teach somebody that young budgeting.
Yeah.
Because budgeting to me, I mean, it didn't even enter the first year. It just, you know, sailed on past. And I tried, but I've never been concerned about money in my life. I make it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I mean, there's no question that I can make it. So when I came to a point where I couldn't make it, it didn't make sense to me. It's like if I get up in the morning and I'm feeling pain in my body, I'm always surprised because I'm not supposed to have pain. And so I don't think about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. It does make sense because that's, you know, money should only be a practical part of your life with the gratitude that comes with it. I mean, but you know what? You're right, because I understand what you're talking about when you talk about that feeling of not having to worry about money, and then all of a sudden you wake up one day and you do have to worry about money. And that's very common for a lot of people, is especially in today's economy, you know, waking up and saying, well, we've always made good money, we've always been able to pay our bills, and now things are getting really tight. And it really makes us step back and look at what we identify with. You know, there's a lot of talk with Eckhart Tolle's work out there with the ego and the identification with things and letting go and transcending that. And that's, I did teach a class on his work, actually, because I think it's so important for people to grasp the concepts of letting go of what they identify with. And I think that on a larger global collective level, this is a really big lesson for all of us to get and understand, because what are we really letting go of? We're letting go of the things that we identify with that we think dictate who we are and what we're supposed to be. You know, when I teach a class, we'll go around the circle and we'll introduce ourselves, you know, to each other to give each other an idea of where we come from and who we are. And then when we're done introducing, I always ask them to look at how they introduced themselves. What did they pick to tell the group about themselves that they felt would be relevant or important, you know, and how is that a mirror for what they identified with? And it's always a very, very significant lesson for them. Because people do it unconsciously. You know, I think, oh, well, I'm a mom, I have kids, I have this degree, I have that, I wrote this, I wrote that. And, you know, to be able to step back and say, well, yeah, I did all those great things, but that's not who I am. I think what we're going through on a larger level is really just learning what to give away with and what we can do without. And, you know, that's an important lesson to grasp, not only on an individual level, but also a collective level. Because as countries operate on a collective consciousness, people, in, you know, operate on an individual consciousness, but they're also part of that group consciousness. And, you know, as our consciousness changes as individuals, we affect the collective consciousness. And only when enough of us have shifted will the collective consciousness change. And I think that's what's happening with our country right now, is we're really at a crossroads. And I'm not trying to get political on you, don't worry.
You can do whichever you want, because you know what? I'm pretty much of an easy person, and I let Spirit guide my shows pretty much which way they go. I've tried doing some guidance in the past, and sometimes it works, but I go with the flow. I've always say, as I said, I've learned to trust, because trust was a big issue. Because I've, you know, do you think I have control issues? Not much. I've always been a very, very strong woman and in control of my life. And when things don't go the way that I think they should, that leaves me kind of, you know, with a dull look on my face. But, no, I allow things to just evolve and develop. So if you want to go into politics, I'll trot along like I do.
Well, no, I wasn't actually headed in that direction.
Well, good. Whatever you want to do for me.
Well, I think
we can have fun with it and laugh, okay?
Well, I think that's a good point, because going with the flow is part of that letting go of what we identify with on an individual as well as collective level.
Okay.
And I think that's a very important part of the evolution process for us
and
as
that
human
was hard
beings.
For me.
Yeah.
Because
it's hard for
I am a control person.
It's hard for most people. It's hard for me. We've all been there on some level or another where we thought things were going to turn out a certain way and it didn't.
Boy, oh boy, I've had a few come to me at Jesus meetings with the good Lord. Now here it is, God. And my fundamentalist friends look at me horrified and they say, if he didn't have a sense of humor, he shouldn't have created me.
Well, I think he did have a sense of humor, and that's why he gave us one.
And as I told my aunt when she wondered why he didn't take her, I said, look, if you were God, would you want an angry old fart of a woman in your heaven? Or would you like somebody with a good sense of humor and can laugh at herself? And she just looked at me with her jaw hanging down. Your answer, choose it, love.
Yeah.
And I love my aunt, but she was a kind of a curmudgeon. After that, she calmed down. Do you know that?
She wasn't quite
as grumpy as she was before. I guess she had to admit there was some valid words worth in my words.
Oh, well, absolutely, absolutely. And we never know how we're going to affect people by what we say either. So it's really interesting.
But I loved her. You know, she was my favorite aunt. She looked at me at times, she says, I'm your only aunt. And I looked her straight in the eye and I said, aren't you lucky you're my favorite? Just think, if you were my only aunt and you weren't my favorite, what that would mean.
Well, you were lucky to grow up with such wonderful people, that's for sure.
Okay, look, I have something here. I'm in starting a new business. Let me hear what you say. I'm starting a new business, going to be helping the military, the guys coming back, and the gals. Okay, let us not be sexist.
but I don't like political correctness. Those returning vets from the war who have issues, and I'm working with a couple of other people on this, two, three other people, and there seems to be a friction between I and one of the other people.
Uh-huh.
Now, I have sat and looked at it. I have tried to go through regression, you know. Is it a past life thing? Is it because that I am good at putting together teams of people? I mean, this is what I've done in the healthcare field. So working in the healthcare field, I'm very aware of what teams work and don't work. Am I seeing with a clear eye? Am I just being, I don't know how to explain it. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, without getting too much into the actual
yeah.
situation,
yes.
talk a little bit about what the interaction's like.
The interaction? I keep getting, she keeps reminding me of an ex-sister-in-law who claimed to have different kinds of cancer, never did, by the way, manipulated, extremely manipulative, always had issues of physical illnesses and things coming up, real or imagined, very controlling, very selfish, very, very self-centered. And that's what keeps coming up when I work, and I don't think that'll work with a group that needs to be dealing with people who are ill and compassionate. Now, I'm being told that maybe it's just I'm being arrogant, that I think I know everything. I don't think that's it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I also feel that there, and this is hard for me to figure out, that there's some envy or jealousy on that side, because that was also something that I don't see in
mm-hmm.
in myself, because I don't see it, because I don't have it, as far as I know. So you can see in the other person what you have in yourself, but you cannot see in another person which you do not have experience of. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I mean,
okay.
From my perspective, I mean, from where I'm standing, the
yeah.
first thing I would ask you is to go back to that relationship that you have or had at some point
had
with your sister-in-law. And I would take another look at that relationship.
It was very disastrous. I endeavored to make friends with her in a way that was against my instincts.
Mm.
And it was perceived as, trying to make friends with her was perceived as a weakness. And from that time on, there was no being able to deal with her. Okay? And it was acknowledged later that my bowing to my ex-husband's wishes of trying to work things out with her were indeed the wrong thing to do. Trying to conciliate and
mm-hmm.
make accommodations
mm-hmm.
was the worst thing that one could have done. Okay? But it turned out to be a very disastrous for the family and everything else.
Sure, sure. It's most oftentimes is when you have a relationship that's like that. You know, because this person is mirroring such a strong experience to
yeah.
you in your life, and it has to do with somebody else, not particularly that person.
Right.
I think once you go back and take a look at that relationship
mm-hmm.
and see what still needs to be healed from that whole situation, would probably clear up the energetics between you and this new person, because the universe gives us situations and people in our lives that need to mirror to us exactly what we still need to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, particularly close family members, in-laws, other kind of family members
yeah.
on that level, they really mirror to us our most deepest wounds and what we need to heal, because they
would
wouldn't be in our inner circle.
But I cannot work with this one. I tell you that truth. I would not be able to work with this person. My feeling is also it's a victim personality.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be dealing people who are coming back from the war zone. I don't have time. I don't have the time, the patience, or the inclination to work with healing another person at the same time I'm trying to deal with healing people who are walking wounded.
I don't mean necessarily go back and talk to her specifically. I mean, just take
oh.
a look at it for your own, from, you know, sitting,
yeah.
maybe journaling through it, finding
okay.
out, you know, why is this still bothering me, that kind of thing. That's
well,
what I
would, I know why it's bothering
yeah.
me, because it left, well, yeah. But I'm looking at having somebody who's in a partnership now, and I'm saying this is not the kind of person with whom it would be a good partnership,
mm-hmm.
is what I'm trying to say.
Well, trust your intuition on that. I mean, if
yeah.
you really think that that's what the situation is, you know, I mean, if the situation is similar, I'm just saying
it's
that
similar,
the situation
yeah.
is similar. Yeah.
It is similar.
it's not the same, but it's the same gut feeling. It's an entirely different situation in one way, but the gut feeling is the same. And you know, and I'm trying to explain it, and somebody else is saying, "Oh no, we've got to heal this relationship between the two of you," blah blah blah. And I'm saying, you know, if you bring her in, it's going to be a disaster because she's got a victim personality. We're dealing with victims. We don't need to have walking wounded in the organization as well as working with them. That's what I'm saying.
But
I just wondered if what you got on that. But I understand.
Well, I think what I'm picking up on it is just you're being asked to just, you know, stand in your own power and know your boundaries and trust your intuitive self and give that its due say in the process. And that's what's most important at this particular time,
The only other thing I said was put it up to spirit and said, all right, you want her in the organization, fine, deal with it. But I'm not going to play games, and I'm not going to be stopped by it. I'm just going to plow forward. You know, either the universe heals it or it takes care of it in another format. It's up to the universe.
Absolutely. That's the only thing you can do, really.
And then I'm just going to concentrate on what needs to be done to get things done, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Good. Okay. Well, I just wondered because somebody else pointed out another issue yesterday and said, wait a minute, I don't need to have this other issue pop up either.
Yeah.
But I just was quiet about it, and the friend pointed out something else, and I said, you know, I wondered if it was in my imagination. She said, absolutely not. She picked it up, and I thought, and I hadn't even mentioned this issue to my friend. So I said, well, at least it's not my.
Well, you know, that's a good point, Phyllis, because, you know, sometimes when we're very sensitive to, when people are very sensitive to energy, such as you and myself, it's we can always feel those dynamics going on at deeper levels, perhaps than even people are aware of, which is why people come to us for readings and why they do sessions with us in the first place.
Right.
And when we're in a particularly difficult, sometimes being in a business position, working out in the world in a business setting is oftentimes where these energetics are very much tested by all of us and with all of us. And, you know, it's really not about changing other people. It's just sometimes you have to know when somebody's coming from such a wounded place.
Yes.
You know, it's not your job to heal them. And that's
exactly
a good point. I'm glad you said that earlier, too, because it's not our job to heal everybody. It's our job to point out to them, you know, that it's about them healing themselves.
Right.
And taking the responsibility to own your pain. Your pain.
Yeah.
You know? And sometimes that mirror, you know, it's not really any. One of my very dearest teachers, and one of the most important things she ever said to me was, it's none of your business what other people's mirrors are. It's hard enough to focus on our own mirrors and try to figure out our own lessons than to try to figure them out for everybody else, too.
I've gotten over the Messiah complex.
Well, no, not only that. True. That's very true. But, you know, it is, oftentimes people will come and say, okay, heal me. And it's like, no. I don't heal anybody. I mean, it's really about how distracted we are as human beings trying to figure out what everybody else is.
Right.
And then not only that, but trying to figure out what our own mirrors are, what our own signs are, and then trying to figure out what everybody else is. And then when we go into past life connection, it's a whole bigger world.
Absolutely.
Of, oh my gosh, what is this? The past life connections reveal themselves when they're meant to. I have found that to be my experience. You know, I can try to figure out everybody's past life connection, and I would spend my whole lifetime trying to figure out.
I'd go bananas. You know, and the thing is, when we talked about going in business, you know, and I began to, you know, she was off-putting from the get-go for me, but, you know, I'm kind of a compassionate person, at least I like to think that. So when I open myself up to allow myself to go into business, I sit back because I'm rather an optimist. But the more I've observed, the more uneasy I've become. And thinking, you know, this is not quite, you know. And then I said, well, maybe it's a past life connection, but that didn't feel right either. So I had to go deal in, am I dealing with my business? Am I dealing with prejudice? Am I dealing with, you know, and I did quite a bit of soul searching on this one. And to come to the fact that I'm spending far too much time being concerned about it, that, you know, it's counterproductive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And at some point in life, one has to make a commitment in business and move forward.
Absolutely.
So that's what I'm doing. I'm just moving forward and letting the universe take care of it, because I really don't have
fun. It's also about sticking to the facts, too. I mean, I think you cut a lot of the emotional and the emotional energy out of it when you, and you know, I want to make a comment about that, too, because cutting the emotional energy out of it doesn't mean that you come from a very patriarch place. I think it's very important that the business world brings in consciousness and more of a feminine approach to the way they do business, and more of a higher consciousness when they do business. But when you have sabotaging emotional energy or victimization energy come into it, it's very damaging to what you're trying to do. And when you can not just stick to the facts per se, but stick to that kind of energy around a business, you come from a more place of a better intent, so to speak, a more effective, I'm sorry, not better, effective intent to move forward and manifest what you're doing. You're aligning your true self with higher conscious automatically by keeping your own inner wheel, so to speak, balanced, your physical, emotional, spiritual, and mental self balanced.
Mm-hmm.
And you bring that to a group, then, you know, you're doing them a great service, actually, Phyllis, by being there, because you are a higher consciousness, because you can carry yourself in a more harmonious and balanced way. You're asking them to step up to the plate, so to speak, and carry themselves in their own way without pulling in the dramatics that are so common in the workplace. And, you know, they're being asked to either evolve and move past their wounds into a higher round. And if they can't, they won't.
And if they won't, they'll fall out.
Right.
I mean, I can see that already, and I think that's what's going to happen. But, you know, I am not willing to go and keep compromising and bending over, because, you know, it's just psychologically, it's non-productive. And also, you hit the nail on the head. When you go in to do an ideal, i.e. help others heal from post-traumatic stress syndrome, you have to have a pretty high balance inside of you, because when you go in with hypnotherapy like we do and that type of thing, they are like children and their radar. They pick up unconsciously what you're all about.
Yep.
And that will either bring about healing or it will scuttle the whole thing.
Yes.
You cannot lie in that setting. You are working with what I call spiritual energy, which is why using hypnotherapy for less than ideal purposes in the military, which was tried both in this country and
absolutely
elsewhere.
I mean, absolutely.
And it was a disaster, not a disaster, but it was unable to be controlled, because they were using it to do that which is against you know, the higher moral realms. And, of course, they were doomed to failure. And they didn't get it, duh. But it can be used to bring about healing, because that's when you're bringing in the higher spiritual realms.
Yeah, hypnosis is an interesting topic, because we're hypnotized all the time as a culture. You know, when in advertising,
we do it ourselves.
It's very common with video games, all kinds, anything that takes your mind. Tons of studies out there. I mean, anybody who wants to do 20 minutes worth of research on the internet, you'll find a wealth of information.
Right.
But the we're hypnotized all the time.
Right.
We're hypnotized on a lot of different levels, and you know, when we wake up to higher consciousness, we become aware of that, and it is a source of manipulation. It is a source of so, you know, it's interesting, because your situation has brought about, you know, a spotlight, so to speak, on a higher level, because collectively it happens all the time, you know. And what, you know, I'd like to point out too, you know, with your situation, it's either about raising their vibration up or the whole group gets brought down by the drama. So, I mean, there's really two choices in a situation like that. Is everybody going to scoot down to match her vibration and go in with the drama, victimization, and all of the other stuff? Or is everybody, or is she going to raise hers? I'm assuming it's a she, sorry.
Yeah, yes,
is she going to raise hers and match the collective vibration of everybody else? And that is the biggest, I think we're all being asked that on a bigger level right now. You know, are we going to stay to the lower vibrations
or move
and stick to the drama and the distractions and the chaos and the fear? Or are we going to raise our vibration up to a higher collective that's being that's asking us to be full of love and peace and calm, and it's not a foo-foo kind of ghost sit on a grassy knoll thing.
Exactly.
it's a real powerful thing. And then we have to bring it back to the world.
Yeah.
That's one of the biggest keys. I think most of the people that I've worked with struggle with that concept, because they can go out and find spiritual enlightenment, but what do you do then? You bring it back to the world.
You have
and you
to
move out in the world.
It, what did Edgar Casey say? You know, it isn't good enough to be good. You have to be. There has to be a reason to be good. If it's not practical, it's not worth it.
Right.
It's no good being good if you're not good for something.
I mean, if spiritual enlightenment means that you stay in your own corner of the world and you don't share that, or you don't touch other people's lives in a compassionate and loving way, we're missing a big key to
what's good here is spiritual enlightenment if you don't share it. It isn't.
Right.
I mean, it's not something you can be selfish about.
No.
It's selflessness. It's self-interest, but not selfishly interested. There's a difference.
Absolutely, a big difference.
And you have to have self-love before you can love somebody else. You have to have self-interest and self-caring before you can be truly loving and caring. But, it's just one of those things that I find fascinating. And my feeling is that we are being given a fabulous opportunity to use this in connection with healing the military. Those who are coming back and to help them integrate with their family. And this is such a serious situation that we can't afford to do errors.
No, it's a really important work, and, actually, because they really need it.
And
not only because of their training and they're indoctrinated into the military. That
right.
whole mindset yep. is in need of healing, period. And then when they come back, on top of that, with all of the other things and traumatic stuff that they've
yep.
experienced, I mean, that work is absolutely needed in this world, especially today.
Yes.
And, you know, I wish you all the best of luck with
Thank
that
you.
Project because...
I think it'll work out. What do you think?
I think it's going to work out great because it's so needed.
Yes.
I mean, that's a voice that's needed. It's an energy and voice that's needed in the world. And as you pursue that on a bigger level, yeah. then more people will get on board with that, I'm sure. You know, if there's anything I can ever do on any level,
well,
please
you.
Let me know. I'd be
well,
more than
I
happy to
Well, I certainly would because we tend to expand the program. You're asked to provide a proposal to do a pilot project. And if it works, it will become a working model for the entire military and all the others. And the interesting thing is, the gentleman that we spoke to, I won't say who, mentioned that there are three divisions of the military department that are involved in finding a healing for our vets coming back. Those that deal with the physical body or the military apparatus, those who deal with the human relations side, the families, the civilians, you know, back to the civilian life, the whole nine yards, and the chaplaincy side, the spiritual. So I looked him straight in the eye and said, in other words, you're looking for body, mind, spirit healing, and his jaw dropped, because I don't think somebody put it that succinctly quite before.
No, I'm sure they haven't.
But I also, well, it's true. I mean, what part did they miss? Hello.
Well, they missed the bridge. See, that's the thing, is yes. everything is compartmentalized, and what they missed is the bridging.
Yes.
The bridging of all of those.
But hypnosis will do that.
Yes, absolutely.
Also, you know, some other things, Shin Jitsu, Reiki Yoga, they're targeting it. But he says, but can we have them go back into the field? Would it make them never soldiers again? And I said, I doubt you would have that issue because... if people go in, see, what they also don't seem to understand is when you teach somebody to take a human life, it is so contra the soul and the purposes for being on this earth, that's where the soul sickness comes in.
Absolutely.
But this is again...
Absolutely. And even when you kill someone's spirit.
Yes.
I mean, killing somebody's spirit with a word
yes.
or an action
yes.
is just as detrimental as taking a life.
But also, in my viewpoint that I've discovered through self-analysis, is that if you can go in and meet those whose lives you've taken or who've harmed you or whom you have harmed, and you carry on a dialogue, and you find out that each of you is in your time and place for a purpose and a reason, and that you were there for being teachers, even if it's a cruel thing like a death,
mm-hmm.
Each of you is agreed to be in that time and place for whatever purpose and reason. And at that point, when you dialogue on a higher level, you find out what it's for.
Absolutely.
That's where the forgiveness comes in. That's where the understanding comes in. That's where you understand, well, it wasn't meaningless and it wasn't, you know, random, but each person chose to be there to be killed or to kill or to survive or not survive. And once they understand this, once that dialogue is there, the forgiveness is there, the weight of the world shifts.
Absolutely.
And in coming back, the healing takes place on the spiritual level, the mental level, and the physical level.
Do you think they would be able to be soldiers after that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because you have a right to defend yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If someone would enter my house with the intent of harming me or my family, would I fight? You betcha. Now, how it comes about, maybe fighting wouldn't be there because you see at the same time you're dialoguing with that soul, that our soul is also learning on a higher level. And that too spreads, doesn't it? Because what you do on one level is what? It's an anthropomorphic. It moves
mm-hmm.
through the different dimensions. So whatever was dialogued would be dialogued elsewhere, and others would benefit even through at night, the sleep. Nothing is maintained by itself, ever.
No, which is a very important thing to get out into the world. So
I may not advertise to them.
Yeah.
There's information, and then there's too much information.
Absolutely. Well, I wish you the best of luck with that project. That sounds just absolutely amazing, and it's so needed. And the war and the things that are going on this planet today
are
such a big part of everybody's life and what we experience. Even if we're not directly involved, we still experience it.
But you are praying for it, aren't you? When you do your work, are you not doing healing?
Absolutely.
So what kind of healing are you involved with at this time?
Well, my background in traditional healing is mm-hmm. shamanic. And
it also
works with, basically shamanic. I mean, most of my training has been shamanic, but
with
such a strong psychological background with my traditional education,
uh-huh.
bridging the psychological aspects, and there were so many commonalities in, where I found myself with these trainings, or working with certain teachers or, down in Peru or out, wherever I was working with my teachers, it was like,
mm-hmm.
There were so many concepts of shamanism that were very psychological. In fact, the whole healing can be perceived as psychological. However, mm-hmm. it's not. It's multidimensional. And, I understand that now where I'm at in my path. But, going back from the beginning when I was first going through traditional, university and coming out with a psychology degree and working my way through college and pursuing my education and traveling and all of that other stuff,
you've done a lot.
Well, I've done a lot, but there were pieces of each of those things that I absolutely needed to put the puzzle together for myself. And now when I go into healing, people come to me to talk about, intuitive counseling. They don't really know what they're getting. But they know when they leave. I've touched on some things that are very, very relevant to their particular journey because I've been taught to see. I'm a seer, and so what I can do is see people's energy fields very clearly, whether I'm working with them in Reiki, because I do Reiki as well. I do body work.
Mm-hmm.
What I do with my counseling is I work on an intuitive counseling level, and then I also work with a body level. So I'm incorporating the psychological and heart with
mm-hmm.
the whole body, with the aura fields and all of those things.
Because
they are all connected. So if you're going to really work with somebody and try to do a so-called healing, you really have to work with all of those levels.
Yes.
And it is shamanic. So it's I kind of found that through like the backwards way. Because I'm thinking I had to do, the drumming and the rattling and all of the, the plants and all of these things and which were great experiences, but and they do work very, very well, very effective if that's the right circumstance for you to do the work in. But to bring it back to my 21st century life and into the world of business, excuse me, it's really something
mm-hmm.
that takes on almost a shape-shifting effect.
Okay.
Because you can't walk into a boardroom
and
be part of a group
well.
And wearing, your
feathers and belts.
Although, I might have a necklace on that symbolizes my connection to that because that is my source of power, where I draw from. You have to shape-shift into that particular situation.
You have to meet the student
where
they are. And if you don't, then you lose.
Absolutely.
And they lose.
Absolutely.
But you can't be above. You have to be at the level of
absolutely.
The person with whom you're working.
Absolutely. You have to know who you are. I mean, you have to know yourself at a very deep level. You have to be able to stand up and say, hey, this is me, and take it, this is just who I am. And that's, I think the biggest step in somebody's life is to be able to stand up and say, I accept myself for who I am.
And that's hard.
It is very hard. Very hard.
And
we'll get a lot of bumps and bruises along the way getting to that point.
What I would like you to do is give some information how people can contact you right about now. Nobody's called in. I don't know if they're all still asleep or what, but...
Well, it's Memorial Day weekend. They're all boating.
except for wanting to talk to you, I'd be there too. Go ahead.
Well, that's okay. I think we had a great conversation,
and
when people
fun.
Listen to this show, they'll get something out of it for themselves, hopefully. And
yes.
And well, the best way to contact me is through my website, hilaryramo.com, and it's RAIMO.com, and there's a contact form right on my website to get in touch with me.
Excellent, excellent. Now, you're going to have a show here, too, so let people know a little bit about that, just a moment, if you don't mind.
Oh, well, you know, excuse me, I'm losing my voice. Hold on. Sorry, I had a little throat issue.
Okay.
Part of the downfalls of live radio, I guess. I have a show on AchieveRadio.com right now. We're syndicating to a local upstate New York AM station. That starts June 7th. That information's on my website, and I'll be coming on BBS starting, I think, June 26th I'm going to be starting. I'm talking to them right now.
Oh, wonderful. Welcome to the...
Thank you.
Welcome to the family.
Much for having me.
Oh, my joy, my dear. It's a lot of fun. As I said, I just let spirit lead us where we go and just ask questions and throw things out to see what flies and doesn't fly, at any rate. I'm so glad about that. One of the things I was going to ask you, I had met a wonderful shaman from Peru. It could have been Bolivia, but I thought it was Peru. And he's come here to talk a few times. I cannot remember his name. It's got to have been more than 10 years ago. But he impressed me so much. And I thought I had recognized him from other times and other places, because he delivered his entire speech in Spanish.
Oh.
And I understood it.
Yeah.
And then,
Spanish is like that for me, too. Spanish is like that, yeah.
That night, we visited together in the sleep in another land, another dimension, and I was exhausted because we spent all night sitting up talking.
Mm-hmm.
In another dimension. It was absolutely fascinating, and we sort of caught up with each other, and I cannot for the life of me remember his name. I even bought his book, but he was Peruvian, and he went back into the mountains. Tell me if anything rings a bell. And he was taken to visit these people in the mountains at where the people lived to be up to 100 at least, but without their hair turning gray,
mm-hmm.
and without really aging. So they keep it.
There's
very,
a lot of
very
sacred
healthy.
Mountains. There's sacred mountains in Peru.
Yes.
You know, Alberto Veloto does a lot of work in those areas, too, and I think if anybody were interested in knowing the location, they might want to look at his site and see where he takes his groups, because from what I understand with the area, that, I think, is where you're talking about, where the people have, they live higher in the mountains.
Yes, yes, and he was blindfolded to be taken to where they live,
yeah.
And so nobody could follow him back, because they didn't want anybody to find and invade their area.
Yeah, and if it's who I'm thinking of, they come down off the mountain once a year for a big festival.
Yes.
There's a big festival at the base of the mountain where the people come down from the mountain.
Something
where they
like
live.
That, yes.
And it is very secretive about how to get up there. They don't want visitors. They don't want people coming up to
right.
where they are. They choose not to, and I'm not speaking for them, but that's, I've
yes.
heard of them, yes. Absolutely.
Okay. So, good. I'm glad I'm not totally over the edge on that one.
No, I've heard of that. And it's, I can't think of the location off the top of my head, but it's one of the sacred mountains. There's a,
yeah.
a sacred mountain ridge down there. I've been in the Andes. I haven't.
Oh, God, you're so
I actually
lucky.
Went when I was 5 months pregnant with my second son.
Oh, my word.
I did a group. My first trip to Peru was when I was pregnant with him. And I didn't go. I signed up for the trip, of course, and the universe had its own plans, and of course I couldn't cancel my trip at that point, so it just happened to be the best time to go while I was pregnant.
Right.
And being in the Andes, you know, it's just like a whole other world. You
yes.
want to talk about another dimension.
Yes.
And, you know, by the way, dreaming like that is, we are in another dimension when we do that.
Yes, yes.
It's fascinating when you can do that, because...
Yes, I mean, I've had some very interesting, it's not for now, but some very interesting experiences. And it's really out of body is what it is.
Absolutely.
When you move to another dimension, and I'm aware of that. But it was just that I haven't met too many people who've experienced down there. I would love to travel. I have a passion for it. I've not had the time or the money or the opportunity or all three together to do that in this lifetime. And I do so want to do that before.
Well, I have to tell you, Phyllis, I'm doing a trip to Egypt in April of 2009 for the Equinox. And Marilyn Black Elk is going to be joining us as our invited guest.
Uh-huh.
And her father was Wallace Black Elk, who wrote Black Elk Speaks. And she's they're a very, very well-known Lakota elder.
Right.
And she's going to be coming to do blessings for the individuals and for the sites that we're going to be visiting. And she's going to do a special initiation ceremony inside the Great Pyramid next year for the equinox. So you might want to consider traveling with me, perhaps.
That's right. Do you see me going?
I can see you going. And, you know, and if anybody wants information on that trip, it's all on my website, too. They can certainly find the information.
You can also, you know, let's keep in touch, because I would love to do things like that. I would love, and I'm hoping that the opportunities are moving and the Spirit's finally saying, all right, Phyllis, I've met people from all over the world, but I've been an armchair traveler. Everybody has come to me because I live in Washington, D.C. I have met people from all over the world. I would like now to go out and meet people where they come from.
Well, it's your time. It's your time to go out there now. You know, you're nurturing. You've taken care of many, many souls, and you probably have for many lifetimes. And now it's time for you to step out and see those sites and see those places. It's very important for people to go to these places at this time.
Yes.
Even though we hear so much stuff about the economy, you know, you have to really think about your path and what your destiny is in this lifetime and how that associates with higher dimensions. Absolutely.
Well, my feeling is that, things seem to are changing and shifting for all of us. And I, for one, am happy because, you know, I've been there, done that on the old checked routine. And I am tired. And it's time for me to play and have fun and have a new way of doing and sharing. And that's what I'm expecting to happen. Before we do get cut off, I do want to thank you so much. You've been a joy and delight to have on.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, really. It was my honor. My absolute pleasure to be here, so thank you.
And it's been so much fun, and we haven't been cut off yet, so. Usually he dings in my ear. He doesn't whisper soft nothings. He just dings in my ear.
Well, good luck with your show. I know your new show. Good luck. This sounds great, and I hope you have fantastic success with it. And I look forward to maybe having you on my show.
Well, I would love to, and I thank you for your offer, because there may come a time when we would like to expand on doing the healing work and whatever works to bring people back in balance. I would love to do.
Absolutely.
Families and the whole nine yards, because healing doesn't come by yourself. It comes with a family unit, and that's what we need to do. And I'm working with a new program with the YMCA. They're bringing hypnotherapy for the first time, and that's starting this week. And that's also a new thing, and a great deal. So I am thrilled to be at the beginning of two wonderful new eras. And I am just so looking forward to the blessings that I know are pouring forth. And I also know I don't get to heaven on my own. Okay, goodbye.
Okay, bye. Thank you, Phyllis. Good luck.
God bless you all.
Okay, bye-bye.
Next week.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.